Hey, this is Peter from Sons of Silver, and you're listening to Shane Christopher Neal. I'm in LA. Yeah, it's nothing. I mean, they said it was like just under 50% coverage, and it started at around 11 our time, just after 11, and it wrapped up like an hour ago, and you couldn't even tell.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking the sky would get like somewhat dark. It was nothing. Not like the pictures that came out of Mexico, for instance, where you know, got black.
Well, I'll tell you, being near Niagara Falls, which is supposed to be the best place, that's why hotels were $1,600 and things were stupidly expensive. But at my house, which is not that far from there, it's very cloudy. But when the moon did cover the sun, it was pitch black. Like streetlights went on, like it was like midnight.
But, really?
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah, but you couldn't see though the moon over the sun because it was all cloudy, right? So you really didn't get to have that image. Some people sent it to me from Hamilton, which it was way better, which is about an hour from here, 45 mm-hmm. minutes. But here it was just got, but it was pitch black. Like streetlights went on. I was standing outside and it was just like midnight. It was kind of weird.
That's so cool. That's what I was hoping for, at least some of that here in LA, but literally you know what it looked like? It looked like because we have fire season out here, you know, especially every few years we get bad fires. And so the sky gets kind of, you know, murky. It was like that for about, I don't know, 30 minutes to an hour. That was it.
Well, listen, LA's fucked up anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Dude, don't even get me started. We're looking to leave. I mean, my wife and I had a long talk about this weekend. It's like, we have got to get out of here.
Yeah. So I hear. All right, let's get on this song and this topic. We got Pete from Sons of Silver. You and I spoke, I think, 2020. World is on Fire, I think, comes to mind as what we were chatting about, that particular song or when you released it. That goes back to like 2020, I think, doesn't it?
It was our first release. Actually, it was the song, you know, it was either World on Fire or it was Read 'Em Their Rights, the first single.
Yeah.
But yes, it was 2020. Isn't that crazy? 4 years ago now.
And you were kind enough to send me a very nice t-shirt, by the way, which I still wear shortly after that interview. So there you go. And that's why when Jody reached out to me, I said, absolutely, we'll have a conversation with Pete. We don't know how to say his last name, but we know it's Sons of Silver. How do you say your last name?
My Argyropoulos.
Yes. Okay. But you go by Pete AG or something sometimes, I see.
No, you know what? You know, very briefly, I used the stage name Pete RG.
RG.
Obviously short for Argent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But frankly, my whole family calls me Peter. I have multiple cousins named Pete or Peter. We're all named after my father's father. And I'm the only one they call Peter. The other one goes by the Greek version. Another one goes by Pete. But when we were, you know, when I was coming up with a stage name for the singer-songwriter act that we formed as a band that preceded Sons of Silver, I just came up with Pete RG because everyone used to call me RG when I was, you know, playing sports growing up. So,
right.
But it was very short-lived. So,
well, we're just going to call you Pete. That's what we're going to go by on this program.
There, that's fine. Fine for me.
Listen, I'm always privileged to speak to artists that also do interviews with Matt Pinfield. It makes me feel like I'm important. Dude. So that was kind of cool. I watched that. I don't know when you did it, but it couldn't have been that long ago.
No, we did it. It was the end, like last few days of January of this year, 2024.
Nice.
It was. We were introduced through someone at Universal, and Matt was kind enough to really dig our stuff, and came over to our studio, and it was amazing. We had a great time. I mean, we thought he'd be in and out, you know, shoot the interview and get in and out. He ended up staying like about 4 hours. We were hanging out, and we're going to go out to dinner soon. So it was awesome.
Yeah, I'm a big fan, you know, just being a guy in radio, and I got his book that he put out. Well, it was probably a while ago he put the book out, but I bought it maybe 4 or 5 years ago. So, yeah, great guy, and he was talking to you. What I'm going to talk to you about, which is Tell Me This, and let's start first. You are putting out an LP, right? Runaway Emotions this summer.
Yeah,
so you're having a full album coming out, right? So talk about that, but then we'll get to the single.
Well, this is our first full length. We've had two EPs. The first EP was released in the spring of, or actually June of 2020, and that was Doomsday Noises, and that's the first time we spoke. Second EP was Ordinary Sex Appeal, came out in 2022, And for this one, we decided to, for this release, we decided to do a full length and 10 songs. It comes out sometime this summer, 2024 here. We're not exactly sure because, you know, everything's now tailored more to the singles, and we're just kind of rolling with each single and, you know, sort of basing, you know, when our release date will be off of, you know, the success of each single, which so far with Tell Me This, the first one, has been fantastic. So it's going to get dragged out a bit.
So this song here, Tell Me This, is a political statement song, I take it, from my, even just listening to it and then hearing some of your interviews. So maybe just talk about the song itself. And I do love that line, do you recognize my ass on your lips, which is, I'm sure, brought up to you quite a bit. So talk about the song and some of the lyrics in it, because they're pretty good.
No, thank you. The song started out, the inspiration was a guitar riff I had, just a practice riff. I'd sit there in front of the TV and, you know, like a lot of guitarists do, and practice my stuff. And I brought it to the band, and yeah, I brought it to the band with some semblance of a chorus, and we messed around with it for a few hours one day, maybe another hour or two another day. And we got something that was decent, but we weren't really thrilled with it. We liked the riff. We liked the direction of the chorus melodically. But I didn't have that line, Tell Me This. I think it was originally Now Hear This. And, you know, we backburned it. And during that time, our original and founding drummer, Dave Cruzen, left the band. And we got our new and current drummer, Mark Slutsky. And Mark really brought a new energy to the band, much more rock and roll and punk than Dave. Dave was more groove-oriented. And that's not to slight, you know, Dave in any way. It's just we were a slightly different band. Mark brings this intensity in, and I'm, you know, in the back of my mind working still on the song Tell Me This, and I was like, okay, I think we should bring this back to the band, and I'm gonna retool some ideas here. Came up with the new chorus line, Tell Me This, had some, you know, a better vision for the song. I brought it back, and, you know, everyone took to it immediately, especially Mark. Adam made some key contributions on some chord changes and some movements in there. And within, you know, an hour or so, we had the song fleshed out. The real struggle were actually the lyrics, because I was fixated from the beginning on turning it into sort of a political rant. You know, originally with the Now Hear This idea, I wanted to say, you know, now hear this, you know, this is what's going on. This is what's going on. That didn't work. So I switched, segued over, Tell Me This. And even within that, I was trying to say, you know, tell me this, buddy. Did you get this right? Did you get this right? None of it was working. But sort of a love story, crazy, you know, ex story emerged. And that's what I went with. But I still pulled in a lot of the same phrases and just ideas that I had been using for the political idea. I pulled that into the final version, which is the, you know, the crazy X version. And so for me, it kind of made their way in there. And I was still searching for something. And that's when I came up with the line, you know, do you recognize my ass on your lips? Which I thought was frankly a little over the top, but Brina, my wife, who's also our keyboardist and engineer, she records everything, including, and especially my vocals. She's the only one in the room. And she was like, no, that line has to be in there. And I was like, you sure? So she went around and started calling the band. And they're like, are you crazy? And Kevin, our guitarist, came in the studio. He's like, absolutely, it's in there. She even called Universal to distribute for us, and a couple folks there. And they're like, that's got to be in there. So, you know, thankfully, she did that and, you know, nudged me along. And that's how that stuck. And it was just, you know, adding a little good poke at the end. A little fun.
Are your roots in punk? I mean, I love your Clash t-shirt that you wear. But is that kind of where you draw some inspiration for a lot of your music? Or your lyrics?
Yeah, for me, yeah, the Clash in particular. But I like punk. You know, there's a great new band I was just watching a bunch of videos on last night that I've been following since they came about. ML and the Sniffers, the Aussie punk band, and they're not as politically oriented. They're more just, I don't know, I'd call it like just sort of street and, you know, neighborhood oriented, just speaking about what they're experiencing for themselves. But I just love that energy. And I always say, if I could have been in any band, I would have been in the Clash. You know, my parents, in particular, my dad played a lot of that stuff when I was growing up. So, that's kind of my first love. And my favorite band is U2, especially the early years, because they're a great post-punk band.
Sure.
So, you know, look, I listen to everything like most musicians do, and I love a lot of different stuff. I love Sinatra, you know, Nat King Cole. I love a lot of Greek music. My family has a Greek background. But, yeah, my heart and my attitude are very punk.
Very nice. Very nice. Talk about working with Tim Palmer. Now, he worked with David Bowie. I think The Cure, I think you too as well, actually. So talk yeah. about your connection there and how that kind of happened.
Well, first of all, it was and is amazing to work with Tim. Not only is he an amazing producer, mixer, and particularly he was mixing for us, but he's also a fantastic person. We were introduced through Universal, we were struggling to find the right mixer for the project. We had tracked pretty much everything. We were down to the last, you know, few bits and pieces. And this was the spring of 2023. And I was, you know, said, hey, how about Tim Palmer? We'll put you guys in touch. And I said, really? You know, he's, you know, the top of the top. And at least in my world. And I reached out to him, and he said, well, I'm awfully busy. And I said, please check it out. And he said, sure. Checked out, you know, our stuff. And he was like, absolutely, I'll make room for this. He mixed a song called Running Out of Words first. That'll probably be the fourth single from our album coming up here. He did a fantastic job with it. It blew us away. And in fact, he blew us away so much that Brina, again, my wife who records all this stuff, she was sitting in front of the studio speakers at our studio listening to his first draft of the mix, which might as well have been the final one. And she had tears in her eyes. I mean, she had more than tears. She literally was crying because she was so happy. Because, you know, we need help with the mixing. We only have so much time on our hands. She had mixed our first EP, second EP, John Fields mixed. John Fields, another phenomenal mixer. You know, but when you pass it off, it's hard to let go. And he did a great job, beyond great. So we then proceeded to mix the rest of the album with him. He not only mixed at that point, he contributed some, you know, extra keyboard parts, some extra guitar parts, a background vocal here or there, you know, more subtle things. And you know, it was really cool because he asked me, he said, look, you know, would you mind if I hear something, if I just throw it in there and just see, you know, if it helps out the track? And I was like, absolutely, go for it. I said, as long as you're comfortable with me being just blunt on a yay or nay on something, go for it. He said, I am, for sure. So he did. And I would say 90% of what he put in there stuck. If there was anything, he probably added tambourine on more tracks than we wanted. So we maybe would dial it back. But I mean, that's about it. There's a really funny time one time when I was listening to the track with one of the mixes. It was Tell Me This, I think, with headphones on, and I heard something, and I was like, oh, did you do this XYZ ABC going into the solo there, or coming out of the solo, something like that? And he goes, no, he goes, that's just the guitar. I thought maybe it was a background vocal stream that he had distorted, and, you know, and he said, but did you hear my background vocal in the verses? And I said, no. And he said, give it a listen. So I put the headphones on again. You know, I said, well, wait a minute. I kept him on the phone and listening. I was like, oh, yeah. I said, is that you? Or did you, like, you know, put my vocal through some processor to make it feel wide like that? And he goes, no, that's me. I was like, damn, you did a good job. He said, doubled my vocal really well because I'm hard to sing to.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah. He goes, I was really proud of that one. And so, but it was funny. I was like, wait, who do you think you are? Mutt Lang.
Mutt Lang, because, I was going to say, exactly.
And the reason I said it is because it just so happened to be in the 2 or 3 days right before that, Kevin, our guitarist, the lead guitarist, he and I had been watching separately, but together talking about it, the making of Hysteria, the Def Leppard album. And there's a scene in there, and Def Leppard's, you know, amazing band, but there's this one scene where they're reflecting on the making of the album, a couple of the guys in the band. And they're sitting in a recording studio in front of the mixing console, and they're flipping up background vocals, and they're talking about the background vocals and how they sang all these parts. And as they're flipping up the faders, they're like, oh, no, Mutt sang that one. Oh, Mutt sang that one too. Oh, that's Mutt also. they're going down the line. You know, and it's like everything's Mutt Lange, so I had to throw that joke at him.
Yeah. Were you worried that I'm sure that he was not inexpensive to get Tim Palmer, that he was going to take the tracks, then you were going to have to say, you know what, this isn't working out? Because I don't know how that would go down, right?
You know what's so funny about that? I've had to do that in the past, and everyone's had to do that. And it's, I think the real pros, the guys like Tim Palmer, they're, you know, at least outwardly, they're cool with it because that's part of the business. We all get rejected at one point or another. It's not necessarily
personal. It's just
as people.
No,
yeah. Yeah, it's just maybe a moment, and sometimes people reject you and then come back later and go, you know, I was wrong in that. But no, he went, like I said, if, you know, once he and I had that quick moment of being like, are you cool with if I say no, he was cool with that. And I said to him the same thing. If you don't like a song, you know, just tell me. Don't be like, I'll do this, but I'm not into it, you know? Because, you know, let me put it this way. When it comes to, you were saying paying, he was... He was very, very good to us. As you know, still a somewhat indie artist, he was right. Very, very good to us, and I'm forever grateful. And in fact, we're hoping that you know, with our next tracking situation, recording situation, that that he's going to be involved more from the get go.
Well, that's awesome. And right now, last thing we can talk about here about this song is the video, because it's in front of me right now. Well put together. So, whose idea was this? Not yours. It was somebody else's, right?
It was our director, David Wolfgang. He's, so here's the deal. David Wolfgang, who's a director and for a bunch of different TV shows. He does a lot of stuff for BET, also for Netflix. He's the husband of Brina's best friend. We've been wanting to work together for a few years now, but our schedules have never lined up. Just so happens this past Halloween, we're hanging out together with the kids. And he, you know, I play him the track. He's like, I got to do this music video. He goes, I already see it. And he literally pulls out a piece of paper for his house. And he starts drawing out how he wants it to be. Very serendipitously, Brina had been accumulating a bunch of ideas for a music video. And they happened to have one of the exact same ideas, which was drawing from a Dave Brubeck album cover for a London live performance from 1964. Just completely, you know, not something that you're going to, you know, be like, oh yeah, we're taking this idea from Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. Still somewhat obscure, right? At least in my world.
Sure.
Obscure. Anyway, so fast forward, I say, go for it. He said, what's the budget? I said, basically nothing. But,
budget?
You know,
there's no money.
I was like, $3,000 to $5,000 these days for a video from a record label. You know what I mean? So we gave him a budget. He was like, okay. And, he comes back with the whole schedule. We show up 10 a.m. or 8 a.m. and shoot for 12, 14 hours. And he did everything along with his editor and co-producer, Sal Sclafani. And they did a fantastic job. And, you know, I'll say it's funny, too, because I went over to his house for a screening and he was emphatic about it, that I had to come over. It wasn't going to just send it, you know, digitally. And he has a, you know, big theater in his home, and I was nervous because, again, this is, you know, my wife's best friend's husband, and I would feel really bad rejecting it. But instantly loved it, and you know, it has that long intro, and it's really not an intro of that length is very much not in step with today's world, where it's like fast, 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 get into it, boom, 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 get out, right? But everyone we sent it to, because we had three different versions, the long intro, medium length intro, and no intro, basically, where it just hits the song right away. Everyone, including record label folks and PR folks, all preferred the long version. And so that's what we ran with. And yeah, he did a great job. And we're actually, we just finished shooting another video with him for a song that will come out later this year.
Well, that's awesome, man. I'm glad you're doing well. And again, thank you for sending the t-shirt. I wanted to make sure I told you that. I may have sent you that message years ago when you sent it, but
you did.
Very kind of you.
I want to send you another one.
Yeah,
I want to send you another.
Okay. I like t-shirts.
Yeah. Just, you know, I probably have your address still, but send it to me again and send me your size.
Well, I got your number here.
Send me another one.
I'll text you for sure, man.